Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. I hope that you are enjoying this time, this transitional time. It really is post-Embolc as the days start to get a little bit longer. I hope that you're enjoying. I've just been noticing how much I really appreciate February here. As the days get longer and there's snow on the ground and we can just actually go outside and be outside after work is really nice. It's like, oh, it's light out when I'm taking Kuma, my dog, for a walk, and I don't feel like it's the middle of the night while I'm making dinner. Yeah, it just feels refreshing and exciting. And I don't know if you're feeling the stirring energy of the seeds. I think we talked about how Embolc, that period, that time in between winter solstice and the spring equinox, is kind of like this sense of stirring in the earth of the seeds. And I actually am starting to feel the seeds a lot more. It's more the dreaming of the seeds, but I'm starting to feel them a lot more. I'm feeling my interest in the garden and what's going to get planted. And I imagine there's a lot of farmers out there and there's a lot of gardeners, and you may be one of them that is really starting even to seed things if you're doing that inside, or maybe you live in a warmer climate and you can actually do that outside. I know that's a thing. So just honoring wherever you are, really noticing, I mean, the invitation to notice what's happening outside if it's not something that you paid attention to. You probably know by now that I am all about us connecting with our environment, with the earth around us, with the seasons, and how that essentially has direct impact on our whole health, our whole body health, our whole mind health, our whole spirit health. I think it's all really intertwined. So invitation for you to just take a peek outside and maybe even spend some time outside, maybe just a few breaths in fresh air, just allowing yourself to get that fresh air. It can be so regenerating to get some sun on your skin and get a little bit of fresh air in your lungs. We're so lucky to live in relationship with this earth. So along these lines of living in relationship with the earth and with each other, today's interview is with Shireen Colley, who actually lives nearby me here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine. She actually lives about an hour away, but in this area, it is essentially we're in the neighborhood together because people really do live pretty far apart. It is an interesting reality and you just get used to it, you know? Anyway, Shireen is really interesting. She's got a background. Well, first she started a nature-based preschool when her kids were young, or when her first child was young, and kind of did that for a while. And that got her really interested in how people kind of collectively relate to each other. She ended up becoming a health coach, doing a graduate program at the Maryland University of Integrative Health, which is actually where I went for my grad program for herbal medicine, but she went for health coaching, health and wellness coaching. And so she did that program and she became a nationally board certified health and wellness coach. And in doing that and starting to do coaching practice, she actually started to see that a lot of the things that people were coming to her for, like they might have been something about their wellness, but in some way there was like a deeper underlying imbalance happening that actually had more to do with cultural well-being, social well-being, spiritual well-being. And so really, instead of only looking at, okay, what is the food that you're eating and how much are you exercising and how much are you sleeping, which are all extremely important, she really looks a lot more at how do you incorporate meaning into your life, and how is your relationship with purpose and connection to something greater, and your relationship to home, whether that's in your literal physical home or your landscape, the seasons, your community, like actually having a relationship where you are sharing, you're giving and receiving, you're really sharing with your local community, having more of a sense of how our actual structures of our life, like the systems and the structures in our lives, impact our health. And I think that's something that, you know, even in this podcast, I don't feel like we've talked a ton about. Like, occasionally it's come up. I remember, and I will link to this podcast for sure, with Abigail Rose when we were talking about the mesentery. We certainly talked about some of the systems that are oppressive in the world and how that can really impact our bodies and how we can look to our bodies for wisdom. So yes, it's come up occasionally, this idea that the systemic environment that we're in, like the actual cultural environment that we're in, has impact on our health, but I don't think it's acknowledged enough, especially in holistic health world. And so looking to Shireen's work, I see that she's much more of a systems thinker. She's more of a collective kind of group community oriented thinker. And so when she thinks about wellness, she's thinking about these larger themes of wellness, but it all translates into our daily life. And so we actually talk about how it can translate into your daily life in the form of the art and practice of everyday rituals, and how you can infuse your everyday rituals, things like bathing or things like making food or things like going on a walk, with multiple layers of meaning, and also with curiosity and with presence and with listening, so that you can over time really grow in your awareness of yourself and in your awareness of your health, and really move towards, you know, who you're desiring to be, or just becoming aware of some of the patterns and the behaviors in your life that are not serving you. So it's interesting. It's a really interesting perspective on health and wellness that I think is missing a lot of the time in the conversation around integrative health, around holistic health, around embodied womb health and menstrual health and hormonal health. Like, all of this, it really is impacted by the systems and the structures and the culture that we're in, the relationship that we have to our community around us. And I mean, you know, one of the things that I learned actually when I was in grad school, which is really interesting, and we don't talk about this in the interview, but I feel like it's totally pertinent to our topic for today, is that loneliness, as people get older, it's an epidemic. It's probably something you're aware of at this point. But the concept that loneliness is actually more unhealthy for us than cigarette smoking. So I think there's something there. There's something really profound there that I feel like we don't talk about enough. And so I really want to encourage you to listen to this and to just let it wash over you. It's kind of, there's a lot of headiness to it and kind of big vision stuff. Let it wash over you, but then just see what arises for you. If any of it does strike a chord, and if you do feel like there's areas in your life that you could tend to that are certainly outside of just your physical nurturing or your herbs or your food or your movement or your nature connection, like, where are the places that you are not connected? And how can you tend to that place of connection? So anyway, there's so much to share. I am excited for you to hear the interview. Before we dive in, I want to say that nothing that we share today is medical advice. Obviously, I don't think we talk anything medical, but I am an herbalist. I am an integrative health coach. Shireen is a health coach, and she is in a ministry program, and she's a guide and a systems thinker, I would say, a real visionary in that way. And so it's all here for your own information and education, for your own personal empowerment, for you to feel into what feels true and right for you, because your body and your womb space always know best. And if you have any specific conditions, concerns, anything you really want support with, seeking out someone to help you is a great idea. Okay, no further ado, here's the interview. Welcome, Shireen. I'm so grateful to have you on the podcast. It's actually exciting because you live fairly, well, local for Wabanaki lands of Maine standards.
Right. So, anybody in, yeah, within a couple of hours is local.
Yes, 100%. So we are in that range for sure. And just knowing that we're weaving a web, I feel like, of earth-centered community and just heart-centered community in this world. I just feel grateful that you're doing your work, and I'm excited to have this conversation.
Thank you. I'm really excited also. Yeah, we've been in relationship online for a while, and it feels really good to make it official and be able to talk to you one-on-one.
So let's just start with you introducing yourself, what your background is, what the work is that you're doing now, and why you do what you do.
Okay. First, I'll introduce myself by saying, yeah, my name is Shireen Cawley, and my first and foremost roles are my personal roles. So I am a wife, I am a mother, I am a daughter. I have 4 children. My stepdaughter's 28 and just had a baby last week. And my youngest is 11 and we've got a couple more in the middle. Through like those roles really are the roles, my roles of being me are the roles that led me to some of my other roles in the community. So back in 2003, I was a new mom, very young new mom. I was kind of at the front of my age demographic having babies, wanted to stay home. I'd studied education, I'd studied art, and I'd studied a lot of like natural learning and natural ways to be. And so I started a nature-based child-led preschool, which it didn't have any of those names. I was just like, let's just do this in a really holistic way. And I learned a lot with the kids. And over time, like those kinds of things kind of became more mainstream. And we became more known for that and developed a really great community, which was a beautiful lab, I would say, for a lot of the kinds of research that I started doing, which led to me becoming a health and wellness coach. So I have a master's degree in health and wellness coaching from MUIH. I'm board certified health and wellness coach. And like, as soon as I got the health and wellness coaching and I started coaching people in my community formally, I started to notice that like everybody was bringing me the same kinds of stuff, even though it was different for them. They might come with like something they wanted to work on. But in the end, once we did all of the like digging around, we would find a lot of the same kind of social wounds or spiritual wounds. And so that really prompted me to start doing, let's dig a little deeper. What's going on there? Which led to doing like a lot of personal, like academic work. And then I did some peace studies at UMaine. And now I'm a DMIN student at United Theological Seminary, Twin Cities, studying social transformation. And all of that leads into like the work that I do on a broader sense on a daily basis, which is hard to articulate specifically. So I think I'll just let that kind of come out while we're talking.
So it sounds like you do the work that you do because it is part of just who you are.
100%. I cannot not do the work. And finding ways to do it in our modern context is what's led to these various degrees and titles and organization of my work.
So is part of what you, it sounds like there's coaching in there, is part of what you offer also kind of guidance for people?
Yes. I guess I'm going to say yes. I don't mean it that way, but I had to have community members write recommendations for me for the doctoral program. And that is what they conveyed in that. So I'm just like, let's do this, right? Let's do this thing. Like right now we have the Sound Heart membership program, which is leading to the development of a nonprofit for cultural well-being research. My form of leadership is just like, oh, look, this is something we could do. Let's do it together. But community members say, she said that it's like I'm walking through the woods, dropping some breadcrumbs. And then as you're walking through the woods, you find the breadcrumbs. You're like, oh, this is what Shireen was talking about. And people do say that to me often. Oh, I was doing this thing. And then I realized that this is that thing that you're always talking to us about. And so the pieces drop in as you encounter them. And I guess that is some sort of guiding.
I love that. I actually love that you are just naturally able to offer guidance to the world in a way where it's just you being who you are. Like that's like a dream life, honestly. I know that there's probably a lot of challenges.
It is a dream life. And the only challenge is capitalism. It permeates all of the other things, but it's certainly not the kind of life that you can just be like, here's an even exchange and I'm going to charge you X amount of dollars for this, because it is just sort of an extension of myself. And yet learning how to do that in our world has been a really valuable practice, and one that I think we can use. This is not what we were planning to talk about today, but this is something that we're talking about in the Sound Heart group. It's something that we can use to bypass some of these systems of oppression and make them obsolete, like learning how to navigate, how do we just do what we need to do, or be who we need to be, or find the resources that we need in when we don't fit the context that we're being asked to fit. So I have a lot of experience doing that. And I think it's useful for what we're trying to do on a social transformation piece.
I think that is so useful for so many of us, probably a lot of people who listen to this podcast too, people who are tuning in to a deeper inner knowing or like interested in living in the world in a way that's more connected, whether that's with their community or the earth or the seasons or their bodies or spirit, whatever it is. I think all of us are, and I think me too, like I actually can't wait to talk more to you about this over time, but just like, what are the ways that we can restructure so that it is, yes, we live in this capitalist world. And so there are parts of it where we do need money, but like, what are the other pathways where we can live like really resilient, really beautiful, really community oriented lives and support each other in that?
That is, I'm hoping we can develop some more concrete and tangible frameworks for that with the new nonprofit. That's, I think that's something that, if we're going to talk about cultural well-being, that's got to be in there. Part of it is the practice of us like, let's figure this out together. That in and of itself is a new way for us doing things. And it's not new, but it is new to us. And so we do need to kind of practice and relearn and adapt it and make it what we need it to be. And so that group is doing that. And I'm really excited about that and the work that I see unfolding. It will be slow, but it will be sustainable.
Well, slow and sustainable is what is actually maintainable. Amazing. So is that localized in Maine or is that like...
No, it is. It's an online membership program. And I mean, again, I'm using the word membership program because that's something that people... We have a reference point to know what that means. But the community contributes by paying into the pot. And each month I give an online offering that's very accessible. Like I'm not asked, like there's no major commitment. It's basically like providing resources each month. Like everybody is tired. Everybody is overwhelmed. So we created a way that like people could stay in touch with the kind of social transformation and personal transformation work that they're trying to do without it being a majorly big commitment from them each month.
Yeah. Having access to resources is huge. Right. Yeah. Yay. Okay. That's awesome. I love that you're doing that. So let's actually maybe shift gears a little bit and just, maybe it's in the same direction, but just talking, like get kind of wide lensed and just talk about like what your overall vision for health and well-being is. I know like as, you know, the training that you have, but also you're into this cultural well-being concept. So like, what do you see as health and well-being and pillars of wellness?
Yes. So you asked me this question on email and I was like, oh, I know the answer to this question. I've answered this question before, but it seems sort of vague. And all of a sudden I realized that it comes back to my guiding values. And I was like, oh, that's why my guiding values just really are the pillars of what I consider wellness. So my guiding values are love, connection, and home. To me, love is like defined as the recognition and acceptance of truth. Connection, I think we're probably going to talk a lot about today. So I'm going to leave that aside. And then home for me means like home in my body, home in my environment, home in my family, home in my community, home on this earth. It gets replicated over and over again in various different contexts. So when I think about like the pillars of wellness, these are to me, when we're talking about no matter what our situation is, our opportunity for optimum well-being is going to be centered around those. Focus on those three things helps to be protective and preparatory for us to be as well as is possible in any given context.
And I love how that could be personal or collective. Like you really, each of those pillars is like, it could be as oneself. It could be in one's family. It could be in one's community. Like that can kind of expand outwards too.
Right. Well, that is how I usually, the pagan clergy part of me, the part that is how I check in with myself to see like, is this true with a capital T? Can we replicate it? Can it be a pattern? Where doesn't it work? why doesn't it work there? That's really like essential, I guess. If for me, when I'm talking about wellness or well-being, it should be something that we can move into almost all contexts. And maybe we need to like make some adaption, but we should be able to use that same definition everywhere if it's true with a capital T.
Yeah, it's interesting to just talk to you because you have this different lens that you look through. Like you're actually, I feel you actually looking at community, like more at the community level and more at the collective level. Is that true?
I would say yes, that is true.
Yeah, because it's interesting because a lot of people that I talk to, like whether it's, obviously I do one-on-one work, but like also if I'm talking to other colleagues, I notice that a lot of times we're talking about this case or like what's going on, you know, in this particular individual situation. Mm-hmm. And I see how, you know, when we expand ourselves to beyond just myself, it really does shift where it's like, oh, well, what are the threads that weave us together?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the part that I found interesting as a little new person. And I think that those are the pieces that's what I've always been following. And that's what's always been interesting to me. So that's definitely very, very true. Mm-hmm. And my definition of spirituality is based on connection. It's what gives you a sense of connection within yourself, within your community, within the world, and within your sense of divinity. So as a spiritual clergy person, that to me is what it's all about.
Yeah. I feel like to me, everything is about connection too. That's not like necessarily the lens that I walk with or like the identity that I hold, but I do feel like having that sense of meaning, having that mm-hmm. connection, it just helps us to feel more like that we have more purpose in our life. Like we aren't just like wandering through the world, just doing, you know, the status quo actions. And there's just a deeper rooting of ourselves. Right. And then we can access, like it's a higher quality of life.
Mm. Yeah. And clarity too. Like, especially mm-hmm. if we're talking about health and well-being, you know, a lot of times that part gets completely left out when we're talking about overall health, we're talking about like holistic health, and yet we still sometimes leave out the part about spiritual connection, which is just about connection. Like what gives you a sense of being connected, which leads into having the capacity to feel a sense of belonging. And so we leave that part out, we don't feel as well because we're human and programmed to like a sense of belonging. It's important to our overall like anthropological health to be connected. And so when we leave that out, we're just missing something that's really essential to us. And when we add it back in, suddenly so many things feel, we have greater capacity to handle them, even if they're really, really difficult. So it's definitely what I would consider protective, to have a sense of connection.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. So let's actually talk a little about how we can kind of bring this into our daily life. What does well-being look like in our daily life? In your work, like I can tell just through having witnessed you on Instagram, which you really do offer a lot on there. So if anyone's listening, I feel like, you know, your space is full of wisdom and reflective questions and concepts that could be supportive for us, whether it's like daily life or at a larger scale. But I can tell that things like rituals and rhythms are a part of your practice. And I do think that a lot of us overlook those. I think that we think, oh, we go to a doctor or a healthcare practitioner or even an acupuncturist maybe, and we get something done to us or given to us. And then we come back and we're like, oh, now we're fixed. But actually, I think in my own experience, being an herbalist, being more like holistically oriented, but also coaching people and just having an awareness of how things work in the world, I know that like rituals and rhythms in our lives are actually much more impactful on the long term. So I'm curious to hear from you, like any thoughts you have on that or what that could look like.
Yeah. Well, I love talking about this. So first, I want to say thank you for saying that about my offerings on Instagram. I want to explain my definition of like ritual and what I mean by that. When I say ritual, I'm talking about like actions that we're performing with our bodies in connection with our spirit. So basically, like, we use ritual to connect our internal environment with our external environment and the other way around. We tend to have this image of rituals as being this kind of like formal and sometimes religious context. And it can mean like a series of rites, and it can mean some sort of formal ritual. It also can mean just a series of actions that are repeated quite regularly when we're being attentive and bringing consciousness and mindfulness to that. So when I'm talking about a ritual, I'm saying I'm focused on the pathway that we're creating between our internal self and our external environment, and vice versa, and how we're maintaining that pathway with these ritual actions. And so I can explain a little bit about what that looks like in daily life. I was actually thinking about this morning because I was taking a bath. You could say like someone has a ritual for bathing. So we can. Some people just hop in the shower, they use whatever products, they're clean, that's enough for them, and they're out. That's perfectly fine if that works for you. And we also have an opportunity when showering, which is something that we are pretty much bound to do. Like we have to get clean some way or another. So there's a need there. By giving it our attention, it can become a ritual action. So like when I go to, and these things all developed over time. I didn't like come up with this. It's just through practice, right? I light an incense. I put on some like special oil, and then I bathe and I wash my hair. Before I started, I unbraided the two braids that I have in my hair. And when I'm done, I'll rebraid those two braids. And it's much deeper than that, because these little actions, when I'm giving them my attention, they communicate a lot between my external and internal environment. So this morning, I went to light incense and I don't have any. And I didn't have any, and I haven't had any for a couple of weeks. So lighting the incense was, or not lighting the incense, was an opportunity for me to reflect on why I don't have this thing that's important to me. Then doing the oil, I could just put it on really quickly, but actually what I'm giving myself the opportunity to do is to check in with my body, notice what's changed, what's the same, is something tender, is something healing. You know, braiding and unbraiding those braids is a chance to remember why I do that in the first place. I've been braiding my hair like that since I was in high school. That's quite a commitment to make to doing something. So why do you do that? What's the objective? And then the products that I chose for the bath, you know, they have a certain scent. They have a certain way of being produced. All of these things are relevant to me. There's meaning behind each and every one of them. And taking my bath in this way gives me an opportunity to deeply connect to myself and to my environment. It didn't take me any more time. Mm-hmm. It took just as long as it would take anybody else to shower. But each of these little sensual reminders were an opportunity to recommit to myself and my consciousness and my intentions, and to bring my spirit out into the world in a way that maybe nobody else is going to notice, but I know is there. And how does this affect things? Well, that was not my bathing ritual 20 years ago, but it has evolved over time. The products that I use have changed, that these things happen because I was giving them my attention in this process. It is a lot of attention, like bringing our rituals into our daily lives doesn't have to be this like big cumbersome thing. For me, it feels cumbersome to have like a formal ritual that I like have to do this thing in a certain way. But when we're allowing it to develop based on needs and what's relevant to us, then it becomes like, you know, it's more relational. There's a lot we can learn and have communicated back and forth between us and our environment when we're doing that.
I love that example. Thank you for sharing. Like, I really could walk through that with you with the incense and then the oiling and then the bathing and the products. And I think part of it is, that I'm hearing is that you're infusing attention and presence into kind of, it's like a practice. It is a practice. Like, we don't think about bathing as a practice typically. We're typically thinking about just getting clean. But like, right. It is, like you're saying, it's this thing we do pretty much every day or however often people bathe. Right. But, you know, regularly in our lives. And even like for me, sometimes I take a moment to honor the water. Yeah, just like the water, because we have, you know, water that comes from the earth here. And so like really thinking about how that water is coming out of the earth and then onto my body. And I think it is just when we bring a little extra presence, it does bring more meaning into our moments.
Yes. And we can say that it brings more meaning into our moments. And it sounds like something beneficial. And through these kinds of practices, we figure out what that really means. Through these ritual practices and through maintaining them over time, that's when we start to really notice what it means for something to be meaningful in that way. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I could say that would help illustrate this point. So like I grind my own wheat and make my own bread, and I've been doing that for a very, very long time. Food is incredibly important to me and very sacred. And I have a family history of eating disorders and have had disordered eating myself. And I have spent a lot of time working on that before I had children, and then I had children and I'm still working on all of these things. And then I went on to do my like yoga teacher training, and I do all my meditation. Years are going by. Right. And I do my coaching certification. It's a lot of self-reflection, and that's all great. I've done therapy. And then one day I came home to cut the bread that I had made. And as I was about to put the knife on the bread, I finally heard this tiny voice say, "This is not for you." And mm-hmm. I was like, whoa. So I've been saying that for 35 years. But without all of the practices of attentiveness, without the rituals of making space for, without saying a prayer and all of these things, there wouldn't have been room for me to have understood that that was the meaning that I was, the meaning wasn't that it wasn't for me, but the meaningfulness of those rituals to me was that over time, I developed enough relationship to realize with myself to realize that I've been doing something detrimental. Mm. And if we aren't doing these things with regularity, how will we know what they can develop into, right? How will we know what space is created? We really won't. So if we're not offering ourselves the opportunity to rest our attention on our bathing or the seasonal change, or like you said, a lot of rituals, I have a lot of daily rituals, they all offer me an opportunity to check in with myself and my community. And so here it gives us a chance to like, to notice things that we wouldn't notice if we weren't offering our attention in those places.
Yeah, totally. I think that just that practice of presence and self-reflection, like having more space to notice. It's interesting. I think, do you see that it changes seasonally for you, some of these practices?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. They, and I mean, that's part of the listening that comes with it, is that things, they do change seasonally, and like not having a prescription of what that's going to look like, but joining the ritual with presence helps that. Like if I had had a ritual on what my bath routine was going to look like, it was a formal prescribed ritual, and this is what I was going to do, it never would have changed. It would have remained stagnant and mm-hmm. therefore kind of lost a lot of its vibrancy and a lot of its communication. But by meeting that ritual with presence and realizing that it was an opportunity to like connect my spirit with my actions, the process has changed and become this really involved ritual now. It evolved into by giving it my attention. And I think that that's something that we kind of miss as like modern humans. A lot of our rituals are prescribed for us. They're either handed down generationally, many of us in a different time and place than they were created. Rituals of like school rituals and community rituals, a lot of them have been prescribed for us. And if we're just doing them without that attentiveness, they lose their meaning. they can also kind of work in reverse, right? There's a lot of things that we can do ritualistically that are leading us away from well-being and sort of towards disconnection.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And I think one thing that I like in what you're sharing is that there's always room to grow, that this kind of like we're in this space of presence and attention, we're allowing ourselves to tune in to what's true for us now. Just like you said, your ritual has changed over time.
Yeah.
For us now. And I think that that is equally as important for our own personal well-being as it is like when I think about my partnership, for instance. Like I'm in 17 years of partnership together, and I think about like how if we hadn't given the presence and attention and the space to change and grow along the way, our quality of relationship would be a lot less enjoyable.
Yeah, and a lot less connected.
Yeah, a lot less connected, a lot less meaning. Yeah, I would probably be like, and I do think a lot of people in relationship do get into that, you know, because there is, it's very, very common. Obviously, we all know it can be very common for people to kind of get into their patterns and their behaviors and not have that space to reflect. Yeah, well, that's all very interesting. I'm curious, like, I know we're talking about, oh, these are rituals that you're already doing. I work with people a lot, and I've seen how hard it can be, and in my own life too, to actually start like a behavior change or a new ritual, add something new in. And I'm curious with your background and just if you have any thoughts on supporting that. If somebody's like, oh, well, I actually do want to explore what kinds of, or even just taking a tincture or a deep breath throughout the day.
Right.
You know? Any ideas on that?
Yeah, I love how we're walking through all of my roles. So this question is more for my coaching self. So we all already have established rituals. We have established rituals that are very meaningful to us that maybe we're not fully conscious of, but they are true rituals with meaning that we are performing every day. And so when we bring some attentiveness to this and we start getting curious and investigating what those are, we can find ways to like guide ourselves into making some adaptions that are necessary, that are in connection with our spirit, that are relevant to the kinds of changes that we're trying to make while still honoring what has always been important to us. So it becomes easier to be consistent with those rituals or those behavior changes because they are meaningful and they are related to something that's already of value to us. We want to honor our current patterns and like honor where we are currently, even as we're asking ourselves to change, because like all of these patterns are full of communication about us and our environment. So instead of jumping ahead to the like, this is where I want to be and what I want to be doing, what I want the outcome of this new behavior or this new ritual to be, to kind of getting curious about what we're already doing and where we could make space for this new way of being and this new ritual and what we're learning, what kind of communication we find by doing that kind of investigation within ourselves.
And so what can that look like on a practical level? Do you have an example?
It would be easier if you told me, like, give me something we're gonna add in.
Okay. Let's say a walk outside daily. That's okay. Something that I wish to do because I want to connect with my landscape or the trees or the gardens or wherever I am throughout the seasons, but at least some amount of walking outside every day.
That is good because I just did this. So someone wanted to add in this exact same kind of things, have a lot of those same meanings. And so we started looking into like where they wanted to do it every day. Right? That was important. They wanted to do it every day. So we started looking for something else that they were doing every day. It was not something that they did on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There's something, what is something that you are already doing 7 days a week round the clock? So we found that they were actually already eating the same thing for lunch 7 days a week. And not exactly the same thing, but the starting part of their lunch ritual was the same every single day. And it just happened to, when we started looking into it, offer a nice amount of time between like when they could start that for their lunch and when it would be done preparing. So that like, okay, what we're going to try and do is say that every day when you start this particular part of your lunchtime ritual, it's fine on its own for 20 minutes. So you're going to use that time to go outside on a walk for 20 minutes. And then when you come back in, there will be, you know, food ready and it'll be time to move on to the next step, right? So instead of trying to shift their entire schedule around making time for this walk, we looked for where the walk was already going to fit into their schedule and in a place that they had already made a commitment and with something else that was already meaningful for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if somebody's eating the same thing for lunch every day at exactly the same time, that that's already a meaningful commitment that they've made. And so it was a really pertinent place to add in a new behavior that was something else that they were trying to build for similar reasons in their life.
I love that. Because I think a lot of people experience, I'm too busy. Like, I'm too busy. I'm too full. I don't have time. That's a very common experience for people to add something new into their life. But this idea of like, oh, you have this 20-minute slot here that is time, but you don't notice it. Like, I think most of us don't notice that. We're just like, oh, you know, bring the kids to school, have the whatever. There's like these things that are already filling space.
Can easily put something else in that space. And if we're not being attentive, we definitely will put something else in that space. And even if we're living very mindfully, like we could use all of our time for anything, right? So if we're trying to change or transform in some way, we do need to bring a heightened level of attention and attentiveness to laying the groundwork for that. Once we've laid that pattern, I don't normally think so deeply about my bathing routine. It just provides information for me, right? So like, if I noticed that something was, some part of my body was sore when I was doing my boiling, that would catch my attention. Or because I didn't have my incense today, I thought a lot about that. Otherwise, once we've established the ritual and we've developed that connection, we have that pathway and it's working nicely for us. I don't want people to feel like they have to like have all of these cumbersome thoughts all of the time. And that's the whole beauty of it, is that you can stop thinking all of the time once you've established these rituals, because your body and spirit are doing a lot of that work for you. So instead of having to think about what you're going to eat or where you're going to go or what we're going to do about something, your rituals fulfill that process for you. However, if we are trying to transform or we are in an unhealthy situation, and by situation, I mean like anything, right? Like most of us are in somewhat unhealthy situations.
Well, can we talk about social media? Because I feel like that is something that is unhealthy. There are ways that could be healthy or unhealthy, and many of us fall into, because actually it's addictive.
I would love to talk about that, because that's one of my like pet things that I love to talk about.
I'm curious, because when you were saying that even if we're mindful, you can still fill spaces with things that may not be heading towards your highest health, for instance.
Yeah. So social media is this like, I feel like I'm going to put it into like a spiritual context, because I think it'll help people understand my perspective. I think of social media as like a magical tool, and we all are like, we're like, here it is, and we can use it, and we use it without a lot of awareness of what we're using. So like, imagine if I gave you a magic wand that just worked and you just used it. You could make a lot of great things happen and a lot of really awful things happen, because you don't really know how to wield that magic wand, right? Social media is a lot like that. Like, I can type in anything I want to see and whoa, it's like a crystal ball. There it is, the thing I want. I don't think any of us would question that a genuine magic ball and a genuine magic wand should be used with caution and attentiveness and thoughtfulness and wisdom. And yet we all have access to this amazing magical tool that most of us have in our hands with us all of the time. We aren't particularly attentive to how we're using it. And I don't think that's our fault. There's no judgment there. It's just that, what are we going to do about it? Like, how are we going to cultivate more wisdom practices around? And what are we going to use it for? And how are we going to wield that tool in a way that we can be confident is leading us as individuals and us collectively towards greater well-being? I have to admit, I don't think most people are like hopping on social media thinking about it like that, but it really has that capacity. And we've seen how many amazingly wonderful things we can access and we can manifest with this tool. And we also are like, oh, but there's all this bad stuff in these like things that are addicting or wounding or, but you know what? We have all those things are all us. We are already doing all of those things as a human population. That is really the magic mirror reflecting back to us. We are doing that whether we're online or real time, because we're noticing it on social media. That's great because it gives us an opportunity to reflect on how we could both change our behavior in the social media or internet realm as practice for how we might change our behavior in our in-person realm, which is a much harder place to change a lot of these behaviors. And it offers us the opportunity to really be very deeply connected to practice what that's like. How do we remain connected without being codependent? How do we remain connected without becoming enmeshed? How can my connection to you support my empathy and compassion without draining all of my energy? We have a real opportunity to practice that with this tool. And if we're not aware of that, we also have an opportunity to be led into all sorts of places and practices that become new things that we need to change, right? New unwell behaviors that need our attention to heal. And so we don't want to be wounding ourselves. We have enough modern wounds that we're working to heal without creating new ones. To me, social media and the internet, I was late coming to it. I was like, I don't know about this thing. I was cautious, but I have a lot of hope for its ability to be an extension of us in a way that can really benefit us as a population in the future.
Yeah, thank you for just those reflections and thoughts. I totally see how there is potential for true change making in that space, because like you're saying, you can practice it a little bit. Like there's like this, it's kind of an experimental landscape to practice in.
Right.
And gosh, is it powerful? Like, yeah. It's just like in any direction, right? So like, where is our attention going? What are we collectively creating together?
Yeah. And we have like a flood there. It's not, most of us have not sat and developed even personal paths that we're working to cultivate with our social media and internet use, much less a collective trajectory. We all just want things to be better. We haven't like sat down and tangibly like decided what that is or what kinds of ritual practices we could use to guide us to that. And we never know, like we never know exactly what the future is going to bring. And again, the whole purpose of a lot of these practices is to get us to a place where, oh, look, now I see why it's meaningful. However, there is a way for us to be like stepping gently each step forward we take so that we have a chance to, like I said, I came to social media very cautiously, right? There is a way to cautiously step forward so that we can make adjustments when we need them. And if we have that kind of a compass as to like, what am I using this tool for? Then we can check in with ourselves and say, wait a minute, is this in alignment with what I was using this for or not? But if we don't, like we were saying before, if we don't sit down and spend some time being curious and investigating like what value we find in whatever it is that we're doing or why it's necessary or what meaning there is, if we don't do that part, then it's going to be harder to notice when we're being like routine instead of ritualistic, right?
Mm-hmm. I like that kind of differentiation between routine and ritualistic. Yeah, that feels important. Okay, so this is a perfect opportunity actually, because you offer something every week. I think it might be on Sundays. You actually on social media in your beautiful space of social media on Instagram, at least, you hold space for people to express or share their gratitude and their grief, both of those things. So yeah. I would love to hear like, I guess a little bit about like why you do that, but also the importance of both of those. And
yes. So actually when I was doing my training as a coach, one of the things that we did was like look at all of our elements of mindfulness. And we pulled out like which ones we were really like strong in and which ones we wanted to grow in. And then once we identified the ones we were really strong in, they were like, so how does that hurt you? Like, it doesn't hurt me. I'm good at it and it's great and I love it. then you sit with it for a little while and you're like, well, so gratitude was one of my like really strong ones. I am really good at gratitude. I'm so good at gratitude that I can be grateful for anything, which is actually not great. It's very harming that you can convince yourself to be grateful for anything. And so I started to try and figure out like, how could I soften, like not use this gratitude muscle so much and maybe strengthen some of my other mindfulness muscles. Really at the time, it was very uncomfortable for me to, like I'd had some experiences where I genuinely had thought that like, this is the first time anything really bad has ever happened to me. And this was not true. I'm a normal human with normal life that like lots of bad things have happened to me. But it was really hard for me like to express any kind of grief. So I just started with wishes, like what I could wish might be different. It became a practice that my children and I used. So we would go to bed at night and we would list things we were grateful for. And then we would list something that we wished for. And so it took a long time for me to be ready to say like that I was actually grieving something. It was actually heavy enough to be called that. And so then like once I got to that point that I could express that I was grieving something, I noticed that that really increased my ability to find even more gratitude and be even more joyful. And it also really supported my resilience, being able to like move through all of those emotions. It opened up my capacity to identify where my own needs were, which is definitely something that I was struggling with. So again, through this process of these rituals, like over time, things changed. And again, one of the reasons I like social media is that you can start something and you can do it. Like here, this is something that we do on Instagram on Sundays. People look for it. They've told me that they look for it, even if they don't necessarily always send. Some people just write their own on Sundays and they don't have to share them with me. I don't need to know what your grief and gratitude are. But it's the process of being reminded that it's something that we can do and just kind of offering that space and over time, letting it be there. Like sometimes nobody says anything. Sometimes people do share. Sometimes big things are happening in the world and it is a place for people that they know that that's going to come up and it's someplace that they can share. One of my requests is that we don't make any comments on anybody else's grief or gratitude, which offers us an opportunity to just be with each other. Like that's a practice we all is warranted to be able to hold somebody else's grief and gratitude. Maybe you think it's wrong. Maybe you want to make them feel better. You can't do any of that. This is just a place where people can say what those things are and a place to practice that. The reason that I do it publicly is to offer that chance for those of us, some of us may be very heavy on the grief. Some of us may be very heavy on the gratitude. This is an opportunity for us to like work on that wobble. Balance is not a stagnant thing. It is a back and forth. It is very kinesthetic. So it gives us a chance to kind of practice that wobble. It gives us a chance to observe. So like, whoa, is it really easy to come up with a grief 3 weeks in a row? And I have to struggle for that gratitude. An opportunity to check in with ourselves. And really like the community practice there is just witnessing that there are simultaneously deep griefs and great gratitudes. And we're going to have to like work on how we're going to hold them all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is simple and it's meaningful, reflective, and it can be connective because of the potential for witnessing. It's like, it really is, even though it's so simple, it's really something that it does feel like it's weaving more connection. I guess that's going back to the beginning. We're going back to connection.
Yeah. And I really like the repetitiveness of rituals is a really essential part of why they work, right? Because they help us recognize patterns. It's not just that we do it all the time. It's not just the commitment to doing it. It's the communication that we receive in doing that. And so then we can start to notice some of the patterns. And I think it's the patterns that have that ability to do that kind of healing work.
I love that. I love that just the invitation too, that this offers to anybody who's listening of like, what is something simple that you could add in.
Right. And we have it could be, so with it being simple, we can make a ritual out of anything. So anything that you're wanting to build connection with, you can build connection with. That's all. just wanting to build connection with it is an avenue to being able to do that. And it definitely does not have to be difficult. Like, I started adding drops of rose water to my water because I was using the rose water in a recipe that I was making that is like really important for me for the winter solstice. And it connects me to like my ancestors and it just makes me happy. So I decided to add it to my water. And now every single time I take a sip of water, I'm reminded of this ancestral connection and that it makes me happy. Like it's that simple. And it offers me an opportunity to be like strengthening those nourishing parts of ourselves. So there's plenty of opportunities for them to be disarmed or weakened throughout the day. So we really can't harm by having things that make us feel like a deeper sense of belonging and connection when there's so many things that are ready to take that away.
Wow, I love that, actually. I love that you just brought in this idea that just like some drops of rose water could connect you to your ancestral lineage. Like, and it makes sense, you know, and I think each of us could, that's something I talk about ancestral connection sometimes. And just like how, especially this is totally relevant to womb space, how we really carry our lineage in our womb space, in our ovaries, you know, physically in our ovaries, we are have the potential eggs that are sitting there. And so, of course, there is that physical piece. But to me also, I think about womb lineage. I think about, you know, in any direction, really, we have genetic lineage, but I think about womb lineage a lot and I carry that. I feel that as like a real location that we can connect with previous generations and long lines back. And to me, there's like a lot with blood and all the things, cycling beings, all of that. And our connection to the earth. But I love that you brought that up because it's like, oh my gosh, just that something so simple. Like what is, if we were to start to learn about something in our ancestry, like what is one thing? Like I know that, for instance, Angelica was like really important in some of my like Norwegian ancestors' experience. You know? And I think like, oh, what if I made bitters? I'm just thinking out loud here. What if I made bitters with Angelica as a primary component of them and I just took them before meals?
You're bound to build relationship with Angelica that way. And you've already connected the meaning with your ancestors. So that opens up a whole avenue there. Now you have a ritual which has two layers of meaning minimally already, two layers of relevancy. And it really can be that simple. It certainly doesn't have to be prescribed. That being present and attentive part that makes it make sense. You had a reason why you came up with that and it made sense because of something personal to you. And I feel like that's the part that is really important to share. I think that this is what's really neat about coaching is that coaching is evidence-based. I use behavior change and all of these other things. But then the art of it is coming and looking at the individual person, like, what is important to you and how would these behavior changes be meaningful to you? And when we make those changes in that way, then suddenly like we look forward, you would look forward to taking your bitters every day.
Right. Exactly. How can I like to ask the question, how can it be easy? How can it be enjoyable? How can you look forward to it? Something that you enjoy, you know, right. Like, what can we, how do we bridge those worlds?
And like, if we can't enjoy it, how can we hurt ourselves, right? In that. Yeah. And there's always an answer. There really is. It's sometimes we need support to find it, which is completely valid and makes a lot of sense in and of itself. I just think about it right now. I've never ever encountered something that I was like, I want this to be a ritual, or I want to make this more meaningful. And I was unable to do that.
It's like unlocking a door. It's really interesting. There's like, it's just these, right. Whatever it is that we're wanting,
right.
There's a path there. So what is that path? And it looks different for each of us. And yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. So I want to honor your time. Just really offer my own gratitude right now for just your presence and your thoughtfulness and your reflectiveness and just everything that you've shared here, which I feel like there's some of these ideas that can be carried on as almost themes. And then some of these more practical, like, hey, putting a few drops of rose water into your water can connect you to your ancestors, specifically for yours. You know, it's like really, the spectrum of what we've gone through. So I'm really appreciating everything. And I just know that if there's anybody who's listening, who is like, I'm kind of curious about what the heck you're doing out there, Shireen. They like learn more or work with you or find you.
Yes. So I want people to understand that I do offer one-on-one coaching and spiritual care, and that my coaching work is often like related to the inner work of developing new ways of being and engaging with our world. So most of my clients are aware that we've had some sort of, that we have social conditioning and are working on developing new patterns. And spiritual care clients are often like processing a specific event or realization and trying to develop some integration into their worldview. Like, how do I address this issue from a place that feels moral and ethical to me? And I already told you all about Sound Heart a little bit. And so if anybody is like looking for me, the best place to find me is Instagram, or I'm on Facebook, but things just get, you know, posted to Facebook. I'm more active on Instagram. And I really feel like it's an opportunity for like this kind of work. Really, you need to build some intimacy beforehand. Like, I would never call somebody to work with them without spending a lot of time getting to know them. And I think that social media offers that opportunity. I like to use it that way. And then my website is thenurturedlife.org. You can find courses that I'm offering or my writing and things like that.
Perfect. You did not mention your IG handle though. So
you can find those links to social media on my website too.
Perfect. Okay. So people will find you. And yeah, just thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation. I'm genuinely excited to continue connecting with you and to see maybe how we can collaborate even locally.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was my favorite things to talk about, and it was so easy talking to you about these things. So thank you.
Okay, friends, you made it woop woop to the end of the interview. Thank you for sticking around if you left and returned. It's just such an honor to spend this time with you, and I hope that you received some gems in this interview. I feel like Shireen really offered both very kind of large vision concept around health and wellness and what it even means to be culturally well. That's like something, who thinks about that, you know? It's something that Shireen thinks about. It's something that certain people will think about, but really to recognize that we're a part of a whole, I think it's really inspiring. So anyway, if there's any, and of course, then we talked about ritual and we talked about even social media and different ways to work with things that we have in our lives in a healthy, mindful way and how that can impact our health. I think, yeah, it's all interesting stuff. So if you want any of the links for Shireen's work, for her website, for her social media, you can find all of those on the show notes page at herbalwomb.com/episode107. herbalwomb.com/episode107. And if you loved this episode, if there was anything in it that you feel like, this was actually really interesting, I would love for you to share it with someone. That would just be really a gift. It's a gift when you share. So for you to share it individually, if you can think of someone who would really be interested in it, you can do it individually in a text message or a DM. And then if you want to share on social media publicly, please do. And tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom if you do share. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thanks for hanging out, really. I continue to feel grateful that this is a way that we get to be together. And that it's just something that, yes, I put a lot of work into, honestly. And yes, I'm interested in getting the word out about my offerings and about the things that I collaborate with people on. And, you know, I got an email from someone who I was sharing about a womb attuned pelvic health event that's coming up. Hialeah Aronson actually is coming up to teach here in Northport, Maine in a couple of weeks. So if you're local and you're actually still on the podcast right now and you're interested in that, I will make sure to put a link in the show notes. But it is coming up in 2024, February 18th. But I got an email from somebody who was saying, you know, I really can't afford that. And I totally get it. Like, I don't have the ability to make it more affordable because it's not my event. And that's why, that's part of what I love about having this podcast is that I can bring people on. Yes, you don't get the hands-on experience. You're not in person with people, but I can bring people on who really have a depth of awareness and knowledge and practice that is embodied, that is professional, that is skilled, and that is intuitive and that's connected. And we can bring, and myself as well, and like we can bring that wisdom to you wherever you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what your financial circumstances are. I love that about this podcast. It's something that is really important to me. As we're talking about like systemic and cultural well-being, I feel like having some of these places where we're generously sharing with each other is really important. Can we give away everything? Probably not, because we don't have a system in place that is just resource sharing and where I can get food and I can get electricity and all of this stuff without needing some income, some money. So yes, I do need to make money as well, but there are so many ways. And I think, what are the ways? Starting to ask the question, like along the lines of this podcast with Shireen, starting to ask the question, like, what are the ways that we can support each other, that we can share resources, that we can support each other's health and well-being culturally? What does that look like? What does it look like to cultivate group spaces where we're able to share in certain ways? What are the ways that we can do it? I think there's just so much that's unknown that your creativity can bring forward. Like you, the person listening right now, whoever I'm talking to, your creativity can bring forward if you decide to explore it. So anyway, thanks for being here. I appreciate you. I am so grateful for this time we get together. And until next time, live well, connect deeply, and have a beautiful rest.